Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Well, happy Halloween to all of you out there. I don't know if you all celebrate it or if you want to or if it's up to you or if your parents say yes or if your parents say no or if you just don't know what to do, but regardless of whether you are or not, happy Halloween to all of you out there. It's not an official holiday for most of us, but for me it is. It's one of my favorites, so if you're not, please celebrate. Got to bring in my friend and co-host and cohort and brother in sports, Bryant Knox, at Bryant Knox on Twitter. He's on every website you've ever seen. I mean it. So make sure you go out and see what he's doing out there. He's a great sports read, great on the sports talk shows, and just a great human being in general. We're happy to have him here as long as we possibly can. He's just a great guy. So, Bryant, welcome into the show. How are you doing? And are you anywhere glamorous this fine day, or where are you podcasting from?
I am podcasting directly in front of my house. Is glamorous.
Absolutely.
It's definitely within the comfy confines of my own home, which isn't the most exciting, you know, destination. But I got some good visuals here. It's right next to a 98-99 autographed team basketball as well. So I may not be anywhere exciting, but I've got some good company here.
Hey, home is
great.
Along
with yourself, of course.
Exactly. I'm at home also. I mean, I say home, that's the studio. I've got a really nice cot, but it's really glamorous. You know, I've got all these interns bringing me, you know, sodas and coffees and all kinds of things, but you know, some people don't want that life. You know, we're up in the middle of the night doing this for a living. So I don't know that it's for everybody, but I know you and I love it to death. So if this is what you're interested in, we have so many unpaid internships, you wouldn't believe it. If you think you know how to get Coke and pretzels to someone that you don't respect, we've got a job for you. It's the week of Halloween, Brian. I don't know. Is that a holiday for you, or are you one of those weird people that only celebrate in November and December and January? Or does this one count for you?
Oh, this definitely counts for me because, every year I get a nice big bowl of candy for all the neighborhood kids, and then I remember there are no kids in my neighborhood, so yep. It actually works out really, really well.
Yeah, you're going to get diabetes, but you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, well, there are worse ways to go.
That's true. Chewing on a Charleston chew is one of the few things you can do in life that just never gets old. And, well, it does get old because that sucker never ends, but it's nice to know that there's something that will never go away as long as you want it to.
I'm a big fan of those ones that are just like not the traditional candies. Right. Like, you know, everybody wants a Butterfinger, but I want the Chico stick. Like
Mr. Goodbar.
Like, I'm right there with you. I like those, you know, a little more obscure.
One of our competitor shows on 1080 The Fan, Primetime with Isaac and Suk, did a whole special on what kind of candy is good at Halloween. And there were quite a few where I was like, are you kidding me? You guys must have lived in the rich neighborhoods where they handed out like full-size Snickers and Milky Way. I got those flavored candy Tootsie Rolls that were kind of off-brand. I got the knockoff Smarties. I got Nerds. I got, what were they called? The NACO wafers, like NECCO. I don't know how you pronounce it, but Basically that's what we got. You know, you got like the Double Trouble or Double Bubble chewing gum. You got the Jawbreakers. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of chocolate to go around, which probably wasn't great, but it was Halloween. You got free stuff. Who cares?
I was going to say, I think that the kids who walked around their neighborhoods and got toothbrushes in their bags, they're listening to this right now, just saying, really, man, you're complaining about those flavored Tootsie Rolls? I got a flavored toothpaste with my toothbrush.
Apple slices and granola bars are what my neighbor handed out when I was a kid.
Yep. I will say, those Tootsie Rolls are kind of strange. Like, even as a kid, I was right there with you. I was like, can I just get some chocolate?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know this. And then they give you that Tootsie Roll that came in like the little cardboard U-shape wrapper, and you'd open it up and it would be just a brick of stale chocolate. You're like, I changed my mind. I'll take those other things back.
Yeah, but you realize it's stale because they've been trying to give those out for 12 years in a row. The same bag.
My favorite is, this would never happen today, but when you'd go to your neighbor's house and you knew what you're in for, but you had to go, And they would just give you a barehanded handful of candy corn and whatever else they had in their bowl. And you just, like, you just stare at it in your bag, like, well, what do I do with this?
Yep. Yep. Also, candy corn, by the way, is another candy that has just everyone's been trying to give out the exact same bag for like 37 years in a row.
It's
like
all the candy corn that was ever made was made in 1918, and we've been trying to get rid of it ever since.
Exactly.
Well, we've got a doozy for you. If you checked it out, which I hope you did, this is week two of this edition. We're doing a Fireside Sports Lightning Round written article where Bryant and I go head-to-head on five topics in a column. And then, assuming we're still friends after that, which I hope we will be forever, we go head-to-head yet again on the air where there's no holds barred because there's no taking your words back. They are here and they are to stay. So, topic number one, Bryant. We talked about Damian Lillard and his scoring terror that he's been on to start the season. They just pulled off a huge win over the Rockets on the road. A little alliteration for you grammar teachers out there. And he had a good night, but it wasn't like a 40-burger or a 50-burger, but he had a good night. I am of the opinion that he can't keep this up, that he's going to dwindle down to the high 20s again. But he's currently, I believe, averaging 33 points a game after this latest game. Where do you stand on that? Do you think this is something he can keep up with? And not just can he, obviously he has the ability. Will he keep it up?
I actually think he will. I think that scoring 30 points per game is ambitious for anybody in the league, regardless of who they are, what team they're on. There's a reason very few players ever do it, and it's because it's extremely difficult to do. But I think that Lillard is going to have his most efficient season to date. Basically, I think he's going to get these numbers without having to take a significant amount of more shots. I think that's only going to benefit him and the rest of the team because, you know, Lillard's never averaged more than 27 points per contest. But with the exception of last year, when he had a huge drop from 27 points per game to 26.9 points per game, he's actually increased his scoring every single year. He started his rookie season at 19 points per game, and he's gone all the way up to 27 in order of his seasons. And I think that this year he will set another career high for points per game, and I do think it'll float right around 30, if not above it.
So one thing to consider is we've made a lot of talk about what his supporting cast has looked like, and it's definitely looking really good so far this season. They've only lost two games, and both of them have been close, and one was overtime. But typically, when you get a better supporting cast, your numbers dip a little bit because there's more mouths to feed and more hands for the ball to go to, and definitely more people that want to take shots because they want to make a name for themselves also. You've got CJ McCollum, you've got Evan Turner, you've got Yusuf Nurkic, you've got Zach Collins, you've got Seth Curry, you've got some other guys that can score. Is this going to dip into his numbers and he'll still be really efficient, but do you really think with all those guys coming along that he'll still get as many shots as he's used to?
I do, actually, and the reason why is because there's kind of a fine line where the better your teammates are, you either attract less defense, less defense, or you take fewer shots. I think Lillard's going to find a bit of a middle ground there. I think that his supporting cast is going to give him a little bit of relief this year, and that is huge for his overall production and energy levels. But I also do think that his supporting cast is going to have many peaks and valleys throughout the year. And I think that as they kind of settle back into, you know, Earth status, maybe Zach Collins comes down from his defensive player of the year candidate status that Damian Lillard wanted to
never
get
gonna
after
happen.
The fifth game of the season.
It's his. Crown him.
And, you know, I think there's going to be a middle ground there when it comes to all of those things. And I think that's going to really open up even more opportunities for Dame, which he hasn't had before.
So Portland beat the Pacers on Monday and the Rockets on Tuesday. They've got three more games this week against the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, and the Lakers. I think they can go 3-2 over that trip. What do you think the rest of the way? They've got three games left, only one on the road. Or sorry, they're all three at home now. They played two on the road, won them both. Do you think they'll clean up all three of those or drop a couple? What do you think?
No, it really is a little bit of a recency bias just because the last time we saw Lillard and the Blazers play New Orleans, they really just didn't stand a chance. I mean, I know there were multiple close games, but none of them really felt in reach after the first one.
Right.
So I do have them dropping Thursday's game on TNT, unfortunately, to New Orleans. And the next game on, what'd you say, Saturday night, I believe?
Yeah, I believe Saturday is Minnesota and then Sunday against LA.
Okay, so I think that they drop and they played so well against the Lakers, and the Lakers have played pretty poorly overall. But I'm going to be honest. I think that this is the stretch where we start to see the Blazers come back to earth a little bit after their hot start. So I think you have them losing to New Orleans on TNT. I think you have them losing to LA because LA is getting desperate. I think LeBron is getting to a point where he just needs to get a win.
Right.
And I think he's going to probably get that win in Portland considering he just lost in Portland and he needs that win for the rest of the team. But then Minnesota, I don't have any faith in them right now. You know, as little faith as I have in the Lakers, I still can't bet against LeBron. There's nobody on Minnesota that I don't feel like I can bet against. So I'll give the Blazers a 1-2 over the next three games.
Yeah, we're on the same trend there. I actually thought they would drop the one to the Rockets and then the one to the Lakers to close out the week, but they actually pulled off a really good win over the Rockets, who were without James Harden, but I think even if he plays, they're still competitive against them. I don't think you can take the win away just if Harden plays. And then the Lakers, it's like you said, they're desperate for a win. They're scrappy. They're going to be fighting for this one, whereas Portland's at the end of a five-game week, and they might have a little lacking in the energy department, and I think they might let that one slip, and I'm okay with that. I think going 3-2 in a five-game stretch is still really good.
I agree.
So speaking of Minnesota, they are in talks with Houston to deal Jimmy Butler, who went from one of the most respected and sought-after players and two-way players in the league to now it seems like everybody wants to see him get dealt, and I don't know why that is, but he seemed like he was happy in Minnesota. That didn't work out. He was hurt last year. Now the rumor is that he wants out and they want rid of him, and Houston's willing to pay the price to get it. And the price they're apparently willing to pay is 4 first-round draft picks. Obviously, those will be sacked across different years because you can't do that with the way the rules are today. But still, they're willing to give up 4 first-round picks for a guy who's arguably past his prime. Is this a deal that you're signing off on if you're Houston?
I actually am. I know that it's a bit of a gamble. One, because Jimmy Butler is almost certainly going to opt to become a free agent this next summer. So, yes, there is a possibility you give up that many first-round assets and you end up losing him to the Lakers or whoever it may be. That would be pretty devastating. But I think that the relationship that today's NBA superstars have, they're talking behind the scenes. They know what's going on. I don't think Houston would make that trade if they really felt it was a risk.
Right.
Losing Jimmy Butler this next offseason. So I think what they're looking at is a scenario where they know Jimmy's going to come back, and those first-round draft picks that they're giving up, they are probably going to be in the 27, 28, 29, 30 range. And as long as they're competing against the Warriors for the next handful of years, I don't think they're going to be too worried about giving up the 30th pick in the draft, you know, this summer or two summers from now.
I agree with that. I guess the part about this that I have a little bit of salt in the wound for is they made a point to not re-sign Trevor Ariza this past offseason, and he's one of the most underrated defenders in the league, a really good 3-and-D guy. They lose him. They don't look the same on the court. Now they're dealing with injuries early in the season. Obviously, there's a lot more basketball to be played, but is this announcement coming on the heels of a silent admission that they should have kept Ariza, or is this totally different?
I think it's related because they would have... They could definitely use Ariza and his 3-and-D presence right now. There's no doubt about that. But I do think that it, even though it's somewhat related, I think it has to be considered independent of that situation to an extent, because the truth is, if Trevor Ariza were just looking to win a title and he was fine with a minimum contract, Houston would have retained him. Right. It wasn't necessarily that they wanted him out the door. They just weren't real willing to pay for him. So they said, you can go find yourself another deal, and we're okay with that.
And he's now, got a ring. He doesn't need to do that.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he's looking to get that last big contract. Phoenix is looking to, you know, implement a winning culture, some championship metal into their locker room. And so Phoenix found a situation that matched what Trevor Ariza was looking for, and it was a match made in, I guess, basketball heaven. It's not like they're going to win any meaningful games this year, no. But it was still a good deal for both of them. Now, Houston, yeah, you're right. They should have maybe been willing to fork out a little bit more money for him, but they weren't going to match what he was getting from Phoenix. So I do think that, like I said, it's independent to an extent.
Yeah, I think that the money wasn't going to be there, but maybe they could have come closer and let him know how important right. he was to that franchise. I don't feel like that's what happened. And, you know, wasn't in the room, didn't hear what was said, but I got the impression they were not willing to come anywhere near the kind of money he was seeking. And the amount of assets that's going to cost them to bring in Jimmy Butler, who may be able to give them the same production, but we won't know for sure until we see him play alongside Paul, Harden, and Melo. It just seems desperate, if I'm being honest. It seems like they know that their window closed on them before they could even get it open, and now they're trying to open it back up.
Yeah, you're right, because the truth is, what we haven't even discussed about this is that the four first-round draft picks, those are the sort of crux of the deal. But Jimmy Butler makes a decent amount of money that Houston can't afford to absorb, so they're actually going to have to send away decent players as well. Off the top of my head, I don't know what the perfect salary cap match would be, but it would probably include Brandon Knight, backup point guard, and pick out pieces that aren't their most valuable to them on the court, but still add up to the right amount of money in the books. And that's what we got to remember. That's on top of the four picks. So it is a hefty price tag for Jimmy Butler. There's no doubt about it. I just think that Daryl Morey has been so desperate for superstars. He swung and missed so many years in a row that he's still trying to make up for not getting guys like LeBron, Chris Bosh, Carmelo the first time. I think that he really does just want to make up for lost time and just really go all in right now. And, you know, Jimmy Butler, he for all of his flaws and all of his maybe, you know, less than ideal leadership characteristics, he does get them closer to the Warriors. So I see why they'd want to do it.
And if you can't have Kawhi Leonard, or LeBron James, I think Butler's the right guy to go after. It seems like a really high asking price.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. It is high. I think it's worth it.
It's worth it. It's just we won't know for sure for about 4 years, maybe eight. But, you know, if they get that one ring out of the deal, totally worth it. Absolutely. But if they don't get one, I think we'll be dogging them about it for years. But we'll see. We have to wait and see. That's our favorite saying on this show, right? We'll wait and see.
Yes, sir.
So moving on to a little college football before we move into the NFL to close out the show. The Ducks and Huskies both lost over the weekend, whereas the Beavers and the Cougars won. The Cougars' win wasn't really a surprise because they've been kind of underrated this year. They look really good. You know, they're kind of a dark horse to win the Pac-12 at this point, whereas you've got the Beavers who are just clawing their way to any victory they can get to climb out of the cellar. And then you've got the Huskies and the Ducks who the Huskies were preseason playoff favorites. Now they're no one's favorite. The Ducks kind of surprised everybody, were the Cinderella team, and then they threw it all away, and now we're not sure if they're even going to have anything to talk about at the end of the year. Assuming there's no major changes to any of those four teams in the next few weeks, what are you looking forward to on Rivalry Weekend when they play the weekend of Thanksgiving and they go head-to-head in the Apple Cup and the Civil War?
Yeah, I'm pretty interested in the Apple Cup. I think that that's going to be a good game. I think that, you know... I think you phrased it really well in our kind of roundtable back and forth this week on Monday when you said that, you know, Washington has just lost piece after piece after piece that could make their quarterback look any good.
Right.
And he is a very good quarterback. There's no doubt about that. But once you start to lose those pieces and you lose protection, you lose some weapons,
all the running backs,
lose some of your own production. Exactly. And so you end up with a situation where I think it's still going to be a very competitive game, regardless of what either team is ranked. If Washington's still unranked, if Washington State's the top seven, I think you're actually going to end up with a very physical, competitive game there. Unfortunately, I can't say the same thing about the Civil War. I think that if you end up with a situation where Dylan Mitchell and Justin Herbert have played the last couple weeks, they're still healthy, and the roster remains mostly healthy, I think that you end up with a Ducks win in blowout fashion there. But, you know, to what I actually wrote down in our piece this week, I'm really more interested in how the fans come out for rivalry week. You know, are the Washington fans still going to be loyal, even though they know that their playoff season has been completely shot for a while now?
Got to show your colors anyway.
Are Beaver fans going to come out, even if they don't win another game before that, between now and then? Show up knowing that they're probably going to be in a bowl they don't care about after a couple bad losses. It's as a Northwest native, see what the Northwest fan base is going to do here.
Yeah, I have to admit that of those four, the team that I would say has the most loyal fans, which is kind of surprising, is the Oregon State Beavers. Those guys have been through so much hell the last 10 to 15 years. They don't have much to show for it, but damn it, they show up for every game. They fill the stands. They cry at halftime. They go back. They watch more disappointing football. And then the next week, they're making plans to go right back and do it again, just like their team's succeeding. It's crazy. And you just don't see the same turnout from the Huskies or the Ducks. You do from the Cougars to an extent. I mean, they're so far up and east of everything here that it's tough to say if the fans are just filling the stands because they live there or because they're actually traveling. But those Oregon State fans, man, they really do support their team really well no matter what's going on.
Yeah, I'll give you that. And what I'll actually say is, you know, I don't think it's any secret. I've never kept it a secret that I am an Oregon alum. I am a Ducks fan. So I do have a little bit of bias, but also a little bit of perspective there. I think that the Ducks fans actually were like that before they became national title contenders.
Right.
And I know that that is so backwards and it doesn't make sense. But if you think about it this way, they had a very loyal fan base for many, many years when they were competitive but never championship contenders. Then they became championship contenders under Chip Kelly. And all of a sudden, all the fans came out from the woodworks. Yep. And so their fan base looked a whole lot bigger and a whole lot more passionate. And then since the post-Chip Kelly, post-Mark Helfrich days, the fans have started to crawl back into the woodwork as the team has become less nationally relevant.
Right.
So it's more that they've gone back to what they used to be as a smaller, more niche, passionate group of fans, you know, as niche as Nike University can get. But I think that we've seen sort of a strange transition there, whereas the Beavers, they've just kind of stuck through it the whole way through. Now, I would be very curious to see what happens if they flip and Oregon State somehow becomes a title contender for 4 or 5 straight years. If the diehard fans stick around and the casual fans stick around past their run in a more, you know, consistent way than Oregon fans have.
Yeah, I'll be very curious about that. I have to admit, I didn't go to any of those four schools, but I grew up in the Northwest, so I root for all four unless they're playing each other. And then it's really tough for me to root against Oregon. I've just always felt connected to the Ducks for whatever reason. You can't choose what you feel connected to in life. You just got to roll with it. But I honestly, if they're not playing one of those other three teams, I don't root against them. I hope that they all do well. My dream is for all four of those teams to be playing in the rivalry games the week of Thanksgiving, and a trip to the playoffs is on the line for two of those teams, and that would be, or sorry, for four of those teams, and two of them go on. I really miss those days, and I really hope they get them back somehow.
Yeah, that would be amazing for, you know, honestly, West Coast football in general, yeah. Pac-12 football, Pacific Northwest. It would be really, really great. I mean, one of the football games I've ever seen in my life was the War for the Roses when Oregon yep. Oregon State faced off in a one-game showdown to see who goes to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah,
it was amazing. And so it's that type of environment in the last week of the regular season that can really kind of make a season for you as a fan.
It really can.
So, and I don't even just mean it. I don't even mean if your team wins. I mean, like, you played all your way through the season. How boring is it to have a game that doesn't matter at all?
Right.
So it's one of these things where, no, it's not likely to happen necessarily in the next couple years, but should it happen, it'd be great. It'd be great for everyone out here.
Really hope it does. I would love to see it again. So we got a few minutes left, so we got to skate through these last couple topics, so we'll kind of merge them as best I can, so I apologize if it's confusing. We have the Seahawks, who are, as far as preseason expectations go, they are on an absolute tear, Bryant. 4-3 coming out of their bye week. They ripped apart the Raiders in jolly old London. They took apart the Lions in it's not the Silverdome anymore, but wherever they play, they played in Detroit, they took them apart. They look really solid right now. I don't want to say great because it's only been a couple of games, and they've had some really lousy games, but they also took the Rams to the wire, had a chance to beat them. Granted, it was in Seattle. We'll see what happens in a couple weeks when they play in L.A., but they look legitimate right now. They don't look like an elite contender, but they look like a team that could sneak into the playoffs. How are you seeing them now that you're... I mean, you and I talked before the season, and we didn't think they would win more than maybe 6 or 7 games, but their ceiling was maybe 8 or 9. Now they're looking like their ceiling might be 10 or 11. How do you see them today?
Yeah, I could definitely see them hitting that ceiling. I really could. But I'm also skeptical, and yep. that honestly has less to do with what I've seen and more to do with what's to come. If
they
you're
won't
familiar
play
though,
the
with
Lions
NFL
and Raiders every week.
Yeah, exactly. If you're familiar at all with NFLTradeRumors.com, they project the strength of schedule, every NFL team's remaining strength of schedule. And the way they do that is by not necessarily your opponent's winning percentages or their margin of victories like some other sites do. But they do it off of opponent Super Bowl odds, so cumulative opponent Super Bowl odds remaining for the season. And the Seahawks actually have a top 5 tough strength of schedule remaining. So I guess you could call that a bottom 5 ideal schedule remaining. So as much as I think they can hit that ceiling that we talked about, I am nervous about it for them, considering the level of competition they still have to face.
Yeah, I'm not buying in yet, but right now I'll be willing to admit I'm impressed with what they've done so far through week 8. You know, played 7 games, had a bye week, they've won more than they've lost. I don't know what's going to happen the rest of the way, but if they succeed, I will no longer be surprised by it. I'll just be impressed. But if it all comes apart after this, I'll probably be a little disappointed in them, to be honest. Even though they do have a tough schedule, I'd like to see them at least finish 8-8 with if they've only got to win 4 the rest of the way, but... whatever happens from here on out, they've got my respect.
Yeah, I mean, they started 0-2, which I guess wasn't terribly surprising. But then they've gone on to win 4 or 5. And, you know, like I wrote on Monday, I don't personally offer moral victories. But if you are of the mindset that a moral victory can be beneficial for your right. team, they probably get a moral W for the type of game they played against the LA Rams. So I do think that it's been nice, and I'm right there with you. I would be a little disappointed, despite the schedule or the remaining schedule, to see them dip back down after kind of correcting course already.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, but I'll be keeping an eye on them the rest of the way for sure, and hoping that they pull out a moral victory of their own and get a winning season out of a very unlikely year that a lot of people thought they would be a toilet team. Last segment of the night. We have the Eagles are 4-4. The Rams are 8-0. The Jaguars are 3-4. The Patriots, as of Monday night, are 5-3. And your Minnesota Vikings are 4-3-1. What do you see when you look at these preseason Super Bowl favorites? I look at that pile and I see a bunch of garbage other than the Rams. I think the Rams are legitimate. The Patriots are great. I don't know what to make with the other teams. We can't talk about the Chiefs because they were not talked about in the preseason. So if we're talking about teams that were on the preseason Super Bowl favorite list, they did not make the cut. They are downright scary, and I don't want to see my team have to play them. But they look amazing, but they're not part of this conversation. So of the Eagles, Rams, Jaguars, Patriots, and Vikings, who do you like the most to continue on a Super Bowl trend?
I think you and I are of the same mindset here, that it's definitely the Rams and the Patriots. Patriots have looked a little shaky at times, which it's not the first time they've done that. But the older Tom Brady gets and the further into this, you know, run dynasty that they have, you always have to question, you know, how long can it last? But I'm not really questioning that at the moment, because I think that, you know, to your point, if we were talking about just contenders right now in the moment, you got to bring up the Chiefs. There's no doubt about that. But as long as we are sticking to preseason contenders, yeah, it's the Rams are playing the best football. The Patriots are playing great football overall, and they're probably going to figure out even more as we get closer to the Super Bowl and the playoffs. So I think we're on the same page there, but that's where my mind's at.
Yeah, I mean, I was really hoping Green Bay would knock off the Rams on Sunday of last week, and they came really close, like heartbreakingly close, and so close that they traded away the guy that fumbled the ball on the kickoff return to close out the game. But it was really heartbreaking to see them lose that game, but it was even more impressive to see them hang with who I expect to be the NFC champions this year. The Rams just look unstoppable on both sides of the ball, and they don't even have their best football played yet. They're still figuring each other out. Once they get going, it's going to be scary. I'm really excited for, I believe in 3 weeks, we get Kansas City and LA in Mexico on Monday night. That's the game of the year that I can't wait for.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
So we've got Patriots that look amazing. You've got the Rams look amazing and the Chiefs, and that's really your top three. After that, there's a significant drop off to the next team, but one or both of those AFC teams will be in the AFC Championship, and I definitely think the Rams will get there. I'm not sure who will be there to contend with them, but they'll definitely make it. I have definitely bet on that, but we are out of time. We are past the 30-minute mark, so apologies for making you guys late again. I know we're just like Marty McFly and Back to the Future, just tardy slip after tardy slip. We appreciate you sticking with us, and we promise we won't be slackers forever. Make sure you send requests for what questions you want Brian tonight to answer to firesideosn@gmail.com, or you can also add us on Twitter. I'm at Oregon Sports Guy. He's at Bryant Knox. Make sure you follow us if nothing else. There's always plenty of things to see and hear on Twitter, so make sure you check us out on there. Check out OregonSportsNews.com. Plenty of great local commentary and sports and health-related items on there for you to read and listen to. Great stuff from For the Northwest by the Northwest. Brian, thanks again for being on. Hope you have a happy Halloween. Hope you all do, too. Stay safe out there. Make sure you vote. I know everybody's saying that, so I'll just say no matter what party you signed for, just make sure you vote. It's an important one. Thanks for checking us out. Stay classy, Portland.